Today is September 12th, and we are learning the leadership of Moshe. And our objective for today is to compare, because I love foreshadowing. We've been discussing a lot of cases of foreshadowing, right? The three stories of Moshe involving three altercations, Hebrew and Egyptian, Hebrew, Hebrew, foreigner, foreigner, is indicative of how he's going to. How his leadership will pan out later in life. Right? That was off the heels of Robert Alter's description, if you recall, of the three wells. Three is a nice number for this. You can't do it with two. That's not enough of a sampling. Right? Three is already your least number, and that's once you have three, you can do it. The three wells is indicative of the woman's role at the well will be indicative of her role in the three. The foreshadowing that's taking place here is something we just discussed at the end of the last class. I remind you of the approach of Ramban. We're going to finish our discussion of the burning bush today. And Ramban has a nuance of how to navigate the contradiction, if you will, the chutzpah of Hashem telling Moshe in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Ches, v'shamu l'kol echa, they'll listen to you, go, get excited, I'm thinking of that talk here, right? Okay, and Moshe's response, the next time Moshe talks, is, v'hein lo yamidu, v'lo yishma l'kol echa. And the chutzpah is that, right? I gave you three perushim to that, if you recall, right? Rashi, Ibn Ezra, Ramban. Okay, Rashi agrees that there's something wrong here, but he doesn't say it's chutzpah, he just says it's choshet b'chsherim. In other words, it's lashon hara. What makes Rashi take that approach? It's vintage, it's typical Rashi. What is he trying to explain more than just, how dare you say they won't believe you? In the end, when you went, they did believe you. It says, V'yaminu. V'yaminu. So, what Rashi's doing, when he's in the portion of Rashi said, is he's trying to explain the specific vision, the specific osos that Hashem gives him afterwards. If Ramban is correct that the purpose of these three signs is just to tell Moshe, look, Moshe, there's A turning to B back to A. Get it? Stick, hand, taraz, back to flesh, right? Water, blood, back to water. If that's all it is, then why not for these three? It had to be something. Hashem could have taken Moshe, look, Moshe, you see that cat? Watch. Right before his eyes, it turns to a dog. Whoa, how did you do that? And then turns, look, Moshe, now look at it again. Grab its tail, and he's holding a cat again. Right? That would be pretty amazing, huh? But a stick to a snake, by the way, some of us should say it was actually a crocodile. Not a snake. Right? But that's bigger. That's not, you know, that's pretty amazing. But be that as it may, here it says Nachash. Later in the Power's Court it says Tanim. Right? So, Rashi's trying to explain why dafka these signs, blood, leprosy, and snake, are very much associated with Tzaraas. One is Tzaraas, which of course we all know, Rashi doesn't have to stretch too far to say that it has to do with Moshe speaking Lashon Hara against the people. Okay, everyone, you see it? Okay, so Rashi doesn't have to try to explain it. How could Moshe say so? I agree, it's wrong, it's saying it. Alright? We may want to excuse it and understand it, but it's still wrong. And he's punished for it. Okay, you all with me? Next, Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra tries to excuse Moshe by saying that it's not chutzpah. He doesn't go with the choshev hasherim because he's
even though Ibn Ezra in Vayikra says that I agree in Pshat that Tzaraas is the punishment of Lashon Hara. Something of Hashem, the Rashbam even said agrees. There's too many stories, he says, in Tanakh that makes the connection, so I go along with it. But Ibn Ezra says, my concern is the chutzpah. How dare you say Vehem lo yaminu li is a direct response to B'shamu l'kolel. Remember the answer? B'shamu l'kolel was for the Zikinim. Take the Zikinim with you, don't go alone. Take an entourage, and you'll go to Paro and show them that you're serious and that you have a following. Okay? The people are for you. So they're the one. It wasn't they that Moshe was worried about. It was the masses. Okay. Now Rashi doesn't say it outright. Ramban says it. If I had Moshe, according to Rashi, I have you right here, Moshe. Why do you think they won't believe you? Why do you feel apprehensive? I just told you, I'm with you. You're going to do great things. You're going to not just be the redeemer, but the lawgiver. Come on, talk to me. Why? Why do you think they won't believe you? Okay, I've already. That's great, great, great use of the foreshadowing. Rashi says that's in Moshe's mind later when it says, "Go back to Egypt. Whoever wants to kill you is dead." Who does Rashi say that is? The two Jews fighting. Oh, please, Rashi, that's 60 years ago. How can you even think that? It's a big picture. Yikus Alilah. Moshe's apprehension is his people. Why should they accept me? I've spent one day on their behalf in the public eye. Why should they accept me? My brother, he's the guy you should send. Right? Okay, so I think you're on target on that. It's Vehem lo yaminu li. Rashi just says, why should they believe me? I'm a stubborn. I do have. Right? So, Ramban takes a different tack. Ramban tries to explain the hain, lo yaminu. What's the hain? Hine, meaning as a result of what you just told me, turn to the end of Perek Gimel, as a result of what you just told me, they're not going to believe me. What is that? No. Come on, guys, this should be rolling off your mouth. As a result of you telling me at the end of Perek Gimel that Paro won't go along with this, good Shabbos, Moshe. Why would you think that Paro would go along with this? This is part of my plan. Okay? God reveals to Moshe the intricacies of this plan that you wouldn't know from what God told Abraham. Right? There are intricacies of this plan. To borrow stuff. Remember we talked about the three. There's a lot of threes here. We talked about the three. Subterfuges, right? Making them think that you're coming back in 3 days. Borrowing their stuff, making them think they're getting it back. And then immediately upon leaving Egypt, going into an area that is, makes you a sitting duck. Right? That was all part of the plan for this story to end with a celebration of a seventh day, because I know what's happening on the seventh day. Did any of you, whenever learning Parshas Bo, wonder, why are we observing this festival for 7 days? Why not just the day that we left? What's going on for 7 days? As if though that when that command is given, the one giving the command knows, wait a second, this story isn't over yet. Like Sforno says, until the seventh day, they were still, get this word, avadim borchim. They were still runaway slaves. Did the Jews know? Did they keep a secret? Did they know they're going on? They're not coming back? The 400 years are not up. Not for another 190 years. Did they know? Because if they knew and the word spread out, the whole story happens over a year. Don't you think like an Edward G. Robinson figure would go and inform Paro? By the way, they don't
They don't intend to come back.
You get that veiled reference? Edward G. Robinson plays Dutton in the movie who informs Paro against Moshe and the Jews. And the Dutton of Dutton Babira. He's a tremendous Ohi Yisrael, by the way. He raised money for the state of Israel in the 40s and was really, really instrumental in helping Israel get what it needed to. But he plays a really bad guy in the movie. Alright? The only way I think what we should do is you should come over and for Shabbos and we'll watch the whole movie over like so. What do you think? Not on Shabbos, we have to Shabbos on Friday. What do you think? We'll figure that, alright? Maybe at the end of the day. Because I actually made a study guide of where this happening is, you know, if it's that thing or it's next version, yes.
It says that Ibn Ezra says that there's a king and won't believe in
when the masses won't.
But in the end, when Moshe actually goes to Paro, it's a king, don't go with him.
Tell me how you might answer that. I want you to give the answer. What are you doing? You're doing a famous fallacy of Parshanut. You're asking a question on Ibn Ezra. Come on, talk to me. Based on a Perush of Rashi. How do you know this Akane didn't go with him? In chapter 5, it says, and Moshe and Aaron went to Paro. So Rashi says, where would this Akane in? I was actually going to get to this, because it's just made to more foreshadow. They slipped away one by one until Moshe was all alone at the time. Right? And just Moshe and Aaron went together.
So Ibn Ezra thinks that we actually wanted this marriage.
Yes! 100%! Just like Ibn Ezra thinks that this is the first marriage between Moshe and Moshe's parents, and just the two older ones aren't mentioned. This happens all the time in Perush Halacha. I'll give you three other examples. Ready? Abraham promises, tells these men, that I'm going to give you some bread. And when he comes out, he doesn't bring bread. So Rashi says, well, what happened to the bread? Right? So Shpan says that the bread was brought out. This is something Ibn Ezra would say, but it's just not, that was not so clear. Of course the bread was brought out. That was brought out right away with maybe some olive oil and a dip. But when he brings out all the food, you don't have to mention the bread again. In other words, it's assumed that the bread is there. When Yaakov and Esav part company, it says Esav went back to Edom. So Rashi says, what about the 400 men with him? The 400 men decided, you know, Yaakov was such a pure person, we want to go to his camp. Whatever happened to them, I don't know, but the 400 men rejected Esav. Right? Ibn Ezra says no such thing. It's just not mentioned. You hear what I'm saying? What does this show? That Rashi is a closer reading of text than Ibn Ezra is. He notices everything that's there, plus everything that's not there. Ibn Ezra says explicitly, by the way, Rashi agrees with Ibn Ezra on that, this kingdom were there with Moshe. Right? So you see the fallacy you fell into? You ask a question on Ibn Ezra based on something Rashi says. Ibn Ezra disagrees with that. But I think it's a worthwhile question. Because it's an interesting, I just want to take it to the next step. When Rashi does those things, he usually tries to have, because he's not just a parshan. Ibn Ezra is a parshan. Rashi is a mechanech. Rashi is a teacher. Rashi says, what is this pasuk teaching? What's my takeaway from this pasuk? Right? Rashi says the 400 men of Esav, he shows a reward for Edom later on in history. Amazingly, when David fights a battle against Amalek later in Shmuel Bet, it says 400 men escaped. Not Shmuel Bet, the end of Shmuel Aleph. 400 men escaped. You see, you get the connection that Rashi now likes to use? Not the same 400 men, but it's, you know. Right? So what does he do with it? What does Rashi famously do with the Zakanim? What's their punishment?
They're non-Hasim.
They didn't get to go up to Har Sinai with Moshe, because in Parshas Mishpatim, when Hashem says to Moshe,
Moshe, go with the Zakenim up to the mountain, and you tell them, stop, you stop there, I'm going on. Implying that had the Zakenim gone with him, they would have gotten to go up a little further. Because Yeshua went further, right?
You get the Rashi? In other words, Rashi loves to bring about as much as possible, I think the basic message of the Bible is that your behavior is noted, and there are ironic responses to your behavior. See it? The irony is, you fail to be there to bake the cake, you don't get to eat the cake. Right? Where again, it shows up that the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to put the ingredients in the bowl, and the cake, the eating of the cake, is actually Matan Torah. So I'm doing this on the Kimbahar, I said, you got me? Come back to here, however, based on Rashi, as a famous Shaila on Rashi. Wait a second, Aharon did go with Moshe. Why doesn't he get it to go up with Moshe, to go all the way up? Right? So, you understand, everyone except the Kasha? Based on your statement you made in Rashi, why is Aharon sort of punished by having to stay down with this king? So, there are a lot of answers to this. I have a personally, I have fabricated an answer, right, that I haven't seen in the Mefarshim. Most of the Mefarshim just say that Aharon got to go higher than that. Okay. No one can go all the way up with Moshe, because no one is Moshe. We'll come to Yisrael from Moshe out. So, the answer I would give is that who was responsible for finding those caves? Not Moshe, he didn't know them. Aharon was the one who knew this cave, right? He's their Rebbe, so to say. But this cave, if fall short of their expectation, their Rebbe has to suffer with that. You know, goes down with that. You understand? So he has to stay with them. He doesn't get to go further. All right, Vayka. Rabban says, "Vehem lo yaminu li," means then when that happens, which is what? When Paro rejects me, like you just said at the end of Perek Gimel, right? Don't you think, God, that at that point they will reject me? So what does Hashem tell them to do? He gives them these three signs. What's obviously the obvious point of these three signs, according to this, besides the A, B, and back to A? What's the obvious point of these signs? You're right, Moshe? They will reject you. To regain the confidence after their rejection, show them these signs that someone sent you. Okay? But that should not in any way be the source of their acceptance of you. Rambam says this very often in his writings. No, it's no way that he's probably writing because of Christianity. You know, not walking on water and that kind of stuff is no indication of the reason for accepting a prophet. Got me on that? So that's the mistake. You get it? Because I showed you the pasuk right at the end of last class. What I'd like to do now is to show you. I'll try to do it quickly because I really want to move on to the next topic. What I'd like to do now is show you that this. Because I hope you see a trend coming forth in my presentations every class. This is something that, unfortunately, was repeated for Bnei Yisrael at Har Sinai. Let me explain. Okay. Heard of a medrash that says that Bnei Yisrael were coerced into taking the Torah, into accepting the Torah by a mountain called over their heads. It's called Kofale and Harkigis. It's a minor set of Shabbos. The end of Paragamar Riki, that is on it. So the. The source of such a medrash, you always have to see where the rabbis dream that up. And how is it that we don't have phenomenal records of such a natural event? Right? Who could think of such a thing? So it's because it says by Yisyatzvu, Besachtis,
Tahor. Okay, what is the pshat of Besaktis? Well, that's the mashma'ut of the word Besaktis. Pshat is at the foot of the mountain, at the bottom of the mountain, but when you start to say at the bottom of the mountain, you know, it can also seem to be under the mountain, right? You know, okay, so if it's, why say it that way, when it's good say it by Yisiat Svu, Baraglea, I don't know how you would otherwise say it, but obviously the Medrash understands this to mean that they were standing under the mountain. Get it? So, Tosfos on that Gemara asks, in my Chumash, it says the Bnei Yisrael said Nasa and Ishmael. Right? And it's actually on that same daf of Pei Zion where the Gemara says that Nasa and Ishmael means that they apparently they did not need coercion. In fact, they enthusiastically embraced the Torah without even requiring to know what's in it. Get it? Gemara speaks about the angels, especially the angels giving up some of their gedula to man. Mankind became like angelic at that moment. Right? We'll see that. We'll see how that fits in. Interestingly, to the Indian angels, some crowns on everyone's head and all this kind of stuff. Right? Because how wonderful it is that we said Nasa v'nishma. Now, I'm going to take you now, with sources, to a place where, unfortunately, I'm going to have to debunk some of your preconceived notions about how wonderful Nasa and Mishnah was. I'm going to tell you now it was a mistake. A similar mistake to Moshe Aharon showing the miracles prematurely to Bnei Israel. Anyone feel where I'm going? What I'm taking you now is Bechor Shor in his commentary to the Torah. You've heard of him? Rav Yosef Bechor Shor of Orleans. He's quoted often by Tosfos and Shas. There's a Perush on the Torah that is in the school of Rashi. There's another Perush that's like an offshoot of his called the Chizkuni. Maybe you've heard of him. Bechor Shor is earlier. Bechor Shor is from northern France. I'd say he was right, a combination of Rashi and Rashba. Very pshat oriented. And you'll see from what I'm about to tell you about how he understands this whole Mahalach, very differently than Tosfos' solution. Tosfos leaves it as a kasha. Okay. Now, there's a parish to the Torah called Das Zekein Mibalei HaTosfos. Are you familiar with it? It's printed in the Kuru, not in the volume, but it's printed in. Should be in that volume of the Kosovo, these two volumes usually as a Das Zekein Mibalei HaTosfos. So that Das Kainim actually very often represents the Tosfos in Shas. Although some of the second Tosfos is on a later edition, later sources. But in Das Kainim, there's an answer to this question that they had to be coerced to accept Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Sav, they jumped and said Nasa v'Nishma. Right? But they weren't aware that there's a Torah Shabbat Peh component, and that needed coercion. Okay. There seems to be no source for such an opinion in Chazal. There's no Yerushalmi, there's no Gemara that says this. Right? Just putting it out there for you. Now, let me tell you what the Bechor Shor says. The Bechor Shor says that indeed they jumped the gun to say Nasa v'Nishma, because when you accept something, whether it's a date or a job, you should be informed about what that acceptance is. Don't you think so? Right? You should prefer to say Nishma v'Nasa. In fact, this is amazing. This source really goes unnoticed, and I think there's a very interesting phenomenon about this source. There's a Tosefta in the fifth parak of Bava Kama. And this is Tosefta Bava Kama, fifth parak, that lists a number of examples of Gnevas Das. Right? If I want to make you think I know more than I actually know, I'm stealing your Das. Right? If I make you feel a greater sense of indebtedness to me for something, that's Gnevas Das. Right? If I give a gift to someone that I try to pass over as very expensive pearls, but it turns out to be just a very, very good knockoff, that's Ganeves Das. Right? Got it? The Gemara is, bless you, Gemara in Yevamos and of Samach Gimel sometimes allows some cases of Ganeves Das if it's for the purposes of peace, but there are very serious parameters of doing so. The person's not supposed to find out, there's not supposed to, it can't be habitual lying. Alright, you get the picture. This Tosefta in Bava Kamma is included in a Gemara, not in Bava Kamma, but in Cholim. Tzadik Dalet lists all the cases. That's how Tosefta's work. Tosefta's the Tanaic source that Rebbe didn't put in the Mishnah. And the Gemara is sometimes quote to Tanya, Tanya Rabbanon, right? You get it? And it quotes a Tosefta. You all know it. You find a Tosefta at the very end of the Gemara. What's interesting is that the Gemara in Cholim lists all the cases of Ganeves Das that the Tosefta does, but one. I think that we purposely avoided this one case, because the Tosefta says, when Bnei Yisrael said, Naseh v'nishma, they were Ganeves Das Elyon, like Kayin, when he said, I don't know where my brother is. Ganeves Das to say Naseh v'nishma. Why? Come on, talk to me. Why? Why did Ganeves Das to say Naseh v'nishma? Why is Ganeves Das for Kain to say, I don't know what happened to my brother? Because you do know what happened to your brother. Right? So why is it Ganeves Das that Bnei Yisrael said Naseh v'nishma? What proves that this name is us? The Tosefta actually says so. But by the way, there's a Rashi al HaTorah that actually cites this Tosefta. It doesn't say Tosefta Bava Kamma, but it seems that on the pasuk, listen, it's in Hazinu, it says when Moshe complains about the door, lo emun ba. This is a generation that doesn't have emunah. Rashi writes, that's the generation that received the Torah because they said Naseh v'nishma, Uveshokala, shortly afterwards, they made a name. You were so quick to say Naseh v'nishma. How could you in such quick order make a name? It must be that you were, finish my sentence. You were lying when you said Naseh v'nishma. You were Ganeves Das. You weren't serious. You didn't take that commitment seriously. Because if you had done so, you would not have made an ego. That's Rashi, our Metaphysical Resolution. Quoting this Tosefta. In other words, we were always taught that Naseh v'nishma is the highest place that the Jewish people has ever gotten to. And here I have two Makoros, Tosefta and Rashi, that says, not so fast. Naseh v'nishma on its own would have been fine, if not if they made an ego 40 days later. Okay? So here I submit to you what the Horshor says. The coercion, as it were, of the mountain being held over our heads is a nice, cute drash of the word kesachtis here. But let me tell you how drash works, says the Horshor. Don't take that literally. If the drash defies your logic, there are different directions to go. Right? But very often, you have to look deeper into the message of this drash. This particular drash wants to just tell you that Bnei Yisrael were coerced, as it were, in some way to receive the Torah. Can anyone here figure out in what way, and that should connect you to our case of Moshe and Aaron showing the signs too quickly? What coerced Bnei Yisrael into not making a more measured and intellectual decision to receive the Torah, which would be Nishma v'naseh? Let me hear first what it is. Let me roll over the facts in my head intelligently, and then I'll make a decision whether I want to actually do these things. Right? Naseh v'nishma implies that they made an unmeasured, not necessarily intelligent decision because they were emotionally connected to God by this. Right? They made such an emotional connection because of the gratitude they felt. This is not necessarily a bad thing, but you know, quite so far, because at the moment, it's okay to connect to someone emotionally, right? But you must also connect intellectually. This is even true about dating. The first word for love in the Torah, where does it appear? So that's what you think. That's correct. If you think that the word Aleph Hey Bet is the only word for love in Bereishis. There's one long before that. Vayedaha Adam is Chava Ishto. The Rambam has the first two books of the Rambam's 14 books. The second one is called Ahava. The first one is called Mak. The Rambam says that in order to have true love, you must be informed. If you have love without information, what you really have is infatuation. Many of you are infatuated with God, that's true. This would appear to mean that there's no such thing as love at first sight. There is something as infatuation at first sight, halavai, that you should be infatuated with someone, learn about that person, and remain in love with that person, marry that person, and have a foundation of emotion that is quickly bolstered by intellect. Right, wrong? It's probably true that your first reason for wanting someone is going to be an emotional connection. Let it be quickly bolstered by an intellectual, knowledgeable reason for pursuing that relationship. Right? And they strong made an emotional connection to God. That is understandable. What you did for me just now. You know, all the things you did for now that I recognize, I know I had some bad momentary lapses in the desert because the sun parched my mind. What can you do? You can do everything for me for 20 years, for 40 years, and then one quick lapse because I'm dying of thirst. What have you done for me lately? I get it. Nasro did that 10 times in the desert. Right? But what I'm saying is that while Bnei Yisrael quickly made a clearly emotional connection to God, right, manifest midrashically by a coercion that I didn't make a measured decision of accepting his Torah afterwards, manifest textually by Naseh v'Nishma, manifest midrashically by a mountain held over our heads. You see what Bechor Shor brilliantly does? He turns Tosfos' Kasha into the Teretz. Don't ask, how could God need to coerce them with the Torah? Didn't they say Naseh v'Nishma? Is everyone getting this brilliance? The coercion of the Torah is what made them say Naseh v'Nishma. The coercion of the mountain being held over their heads. Figuratively, you get it? You all with me on this? Okay. All right, so as such, they had to be informed properly. We should now teach them. We really have to make them an intellectual connection. Right. There's more to talk about the Egel as we go on. But while I know that what I'm about to do with you for the next 10 or 15 minutes is not directly related to Moshe Naharon, which is our third week, Moshe Naharon, you see, I think it's so well connected to this. But I just want to make sure everyone makes the first connection. That Moshe and Aharon showing the signs at the end of chapter 4, first, before even describing the mission, right, is creating an acceptance and a relationship between themselves and Bnei Israel
that foreshadows the relationship that Yisrael made with Hashem later, which is when Bnei Yisrael saw those three signs. Whoa, look at that! Look what they just did! And now it looks like water again! Look at that stuff! So the word spread on all social media. That's it, guys, we're so happy, we're thrilled, and we know it's going to happen soon. Now, did Moshe tell them that God's going, not so fast, guys, not so fast. It's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know if you told them. They shared the whole end of chapter 4, end of chapter 3 with the kids. You get me? But do you agree that by showing the signs immediately that they made an emotional connection first, to be followed hopefully by an intellectual connection? Get it? Ahava followed by Maka. Now, again, it's the relationships. Hopefully the Ahava, they come first, but then you have to have Maka to make sure that infatuation moves to true love. Okay, now let me take you. I'm just doing this because of. No one here is married, right? Sometimes they have married students. Right? Okay, so I take you to another place, which is Parshas Chayisar. As soon as you feel what's coming down, just raise your hand and tell me that. Oh, I get the connection, right? Hashem tells Avram tells his servant to find a wife for his son. I'm going to call that servant Eliezer, even though he's never named. But Rashi says it's Eliezer. I can go along with it. He's Damesek Besi. He's called Damesek Eliezer. He's, you know, he's a Moshel B'chol HaShalom. It's simple that it's Eliezer, okay? It actually helps along my thesis, because if he is Damesek Eliezer from Damascus, he knows what a good argument will help out an Aramean to let his daughter come with me, because I don't want to wait a year. I want to take her home with me. Right? What argument is going to work well with an Aramean? Lavan tells Yaakov in Parshas Vayetze, Nichashti. I did Nichush, and I know what's going on with you and my grandchildren. What's Nichush? Nichush is divination. Now, there's a Gemara in Chulin, right near that other Gemara I just mentioned that lists all the cases of Gnevis Das in Perakid Anoshe. The Gemara says that what Eliezer did to get him find a wife says Kol Nichush She'eno Ke Eliezer Eved Avram Eno Nichush. Those who says, according to the opinion that Bnei Noah are Usher and Kishuv, how do they do such a thing? Because it's Tzadik. All right, I'm just saying. The Gemara says that what Eliezer did smacks of Nichush. Maybe you know Gemara in the beginning of Tainus. Shlosha Shalu Shaloka Hogan. Remember that Gemara? Three biblical characters made bad deals. Shaul said, whoever kills Goliath gets to marry my daughter. What are you crazy? What happens if a Manzer kills Goliath? But he got a good answer. He got double. Eliezer also gets a good answer. What happens if a Khamet? What happens if a Chigeris? What if a Suma? What if someone gives you the water who's not appropriate for you? Remember, and he gets also a good answer. Who gets the bad answer? Do you remember?
Oh.
Come on.
He says that next thing comes out of the house.
Yes. The first thing that comes out of my house, I'll offer it. Right. So Mara says it seems to be, Ramban at the end of Vayikra has all mahalach with Ibn Ezra about what he actually meant. But Lamaisa, he says the first thing that comes out, he's probably thinking it'll be an animal, but it was indeed his daughter. No one remembers his name? Yes, Yiftach. So you see that Gemara seems to say it. These two cases. Eliezer, what were you thinking? Is this the best way to choose a wife? So in defense of Eliezer, he might say two things. One, Avram told me when I left, God will send an angel before you to make you successful. So I had good reason to feel for my master's promise that I would get help. Accept this answer, right? Two, I'm from this place, guys. I know what impresses them. When I went to that house and said that I made this nichush, right? And then who came out? Your daughter. So Lavan said something cute. Now Shemiyot Zahat Avar. That's love and talk. You hear that? We say, you know, Chashidachuz mi Hashem yotzah hadavar. That's love. Right?
Because the nichush,
right? He's brilliant. He knows how these people work. He's from there. That's why I like to say it's Eliezer. Get it? In chapter 15, he's called Tav, from Damascus. Now, now he's called Zakan Beisol, we call him Moshe Bechol Shelo. Who else could that be? Right, you get it? Okay. So he feels confident that I can come up with this nichush, right? But his actions betray his intentions. Why? Because as he approaches the well, the Torah says that the Benos Ha'aretz were Shoavos Mayim. The daughters of that area were bringing up water from the well. Could have been multiple wells, all right, but it could be multiple sources, but from one well, spring on it. So his actions betray a sort of certainty. Because what does he do? He says, the first girl that gives me, I mean, he's amazing. He's one for one. He should have called out from there and he says, who has water for a thirsty stranger? That's probably, I don't know, who does that kind of thing where everyone's coming with their pitchers. He goes, listen, I'm just passing by here. I'm dying of thirst. Can anybody help me? So four girls come by and say, okay, yeah, I have a little bit. And then one says, because after all, how much can one man drink? Two cups, four cups. By looking at, you know how much camels drink after a long trip, right? By looking at the camels and saying, you know, maybe they're thirsty too. It's not just some chesed. That's a serious, you know, a serious inconvenience, to say the least, right? And by the way, here, remember, I always, especially in Sefer Bereishis, but always read text with your antenna up. The way she's behaving with this servant in the beginning of Perek Chavdalet, Vatimaher, Vatorot, is supposed to, when your antenna are up, what does that remind you of? The way that Avraham behaves in the beginning of Vayera. All the verbs that describing her are in masculine, and describing Avraham running after these strangers. His jaw drops and he thinks, this will be a great daughter-in-law for Avraham. She's just like Avraham in so many ways, but she's not so much like Yitzchak. But the purpose of this story is to let you know that that's okay. You don't have to be exactly like someone else to make a marriage. Adrabah, you're already living with the only person on earth that's exactly like you. What do you need someone else like you? Right? There are lots of messages like this in that story, but here is one very powerful one. I think I have just a few more minutes. So, when what does he do? What does he actually do? He sees Rivka, and it says, "Vayaratz ha'eved likrosa," because it says he saw her with the jug on her shoulder, and it says, "Vatzimalei eskada." Her pitcher was full, and he ran right to her because it was a good moment for her to respond to a stranger saying, "Can I have some water?" Right? Most people would say, "Get out of here, Shlob! I just got this from my family," right? And if very few would actually say, "Sure, you look thirsty, have some," and then to say, "This is special," right? So why run to one girl? What did he see in her that made him run to this one and not give anybody else there that day a chance? Then do you know what Rashi writes? Rashi says it's about three people. Yaakov, Moshe, and Rashi. Now, you earn the criticism of Ibn Ezra, who says that you're writing for five-year-olds. He's probably right. He was right. Hamisha Lamikra. He wants the Torah to be available to five-year-olds. But he says, the Lamikra says, leave that for your, you know, for your Shalashim's Torah. Don't put that into a parish you say is child. It wasn't just even Ezra who had this objection to Rashi. It was his own grandson, Rashbam, who has this objection to Rashi. What do you see in the Pasuk that makes you say that the water rose out of the well?
Because if it's just that, why else did he run after her? That's circular reasoning. I want you to be good readers of Rashi. The reason why Rashi says that the water rose for her is this word right here, Atzimalei. Explain to me.
Yes, it's not the word for drawing water, it's just the word.
Right, she didn't have to draw the water. The water came to her. Shoavos. Everyone else has to shoav. She doesn't. And by Yaakov and Moshe, it also says in the text that the others are doing this, but they just get the water without that verb. That's how Rashi works. He's such a close reader. You get it? You don't see it? Okay, so if I asked you, how does Rashi know that the water rose up to Rivka, to say, well, why else did he run after her, is circular reasoning. If I asked you, why does it say he ran after her, and you answered because the water rose up for her, that's correct. That's what Rashi thought. But then if I asked you, why does Rashi say that the water rose for her, that's not enough. That's just the reasoning in a circle. It's because the word sha'av does not appear by Rivka here. It only appears later when she gets the water for the camels. But here it doesn't. But Tzimalei implies... Okay? So he ran to her. He was so impressed to get the miracle, right? He said, oh, she's Mulamendis Benissim. She's amazing. And he was already ready to drop his condition. What the Mefarshim to Rashi asked about him. So she's able to bring up water like this, right? Why did you even have to test her? She's obvious for you, so to take her right home. Right? You didn't even have to test. Ah, he caught himself. I was impressed by Rivka like Nasib and Ishma. The coercion is what she coerced me into thinking she's perfect for Yitzchak by doing this miracle. Moshe and Aaron coerced Bnei Yisrael. Right? It's a lot easier to coerce someone with love than with intellect. Right? Unless you're approaching it from the right direction. Following? That's why we start with Mata and then move to Ava. You get it? That's why Vayeda Adam is Chava Ishto. Love needs to be informed. So the story continues. She could be Melumedes Benissim. I think that Melumedes Benissim, that the water rising out of the pail, because if I had Rashi here and I asked him, Rashi, do you really believe that the water rose into the pail? I'm 80% sure believe that Rashi would say something like, yeah, that's what it says in many gracious rabbis. But 20% of me thinks that Rashi would say, no. That's how Medrash works, and believe it or not, that's how I work. The nace of the water rising into a pail is what you might experience when you're on a date with someone for a blind date and you find out that she has everything you're looking for and her bar is loaded. And at the end of the day, she tells you, I really had such a great time. I hope we can go out again. She tells you that. Now you have to call the shots on and find out if she wants a second date. What's with that? I never did that in my time. Right? Come on yourself if you're compatible. Right? Imagine that. In other words, she's miraculous. She's got everything I'm looking for. But don't go the next step until you determine that she's a balas chesed. She snaps back at the waiter when you're eating it because she didn't get exactly what she wanted, then you know, she can snap like that at the waiter, she can snap like that at her children. No. I'm not saying that, you know, you can work with things, I don't know, you have to figure it out, but you know what I'm saying? You have to be informed. And the information that Eliezer is saying, even though she's Mulamedes Benissim, she has miracles behind her, is you have to be sure that she is chesed is what you need to as the foundation of any relationship. That's to be informed. Great looks, the achitzonios will make you fall in love right away. Perhaps. That's not love. Until you test to be more intellectual. Has everybody seen now how the miracle of the water rising out of the well, the miracles that Aaron and Moshe show at the beginning of Perkei, and the miracles Bnei Yisrael was experiencing, that's right, are all similarly connected here. where there's an intellectual component that must follow. It's okay if the emotion comes first, as long as the intellect moves right away. But it seems that the basis, how do we see this? How do we know that with Bnei Yisrael? What would be the comparable element of the Egel in the Moshe Aaron saga in chapter 5? Right after you accepted us, what happened? Go ahead, can you finish my sentence? Right after you accepted Moshe Aaron, the first sign of a problem, you're all complaining. You say, well, you put a sword in Power's hand, you're like, guys, I told you this. Did Moshe tell them Power will refuse them beforehand? Maybe they too were apprehensive to show. They were so quick to show their miracles first. You know, maybe they didn't even tell them what's all the bad stuff that you should expect to happen. The minute something bad happens, you're making an Egel. Right? Okay. All right, guys, but if you're emotionally and intellectually connected to someone and you think it works, everyone, there will always be problems. You'll be able to weather them. Okay? All right, guys, that last 15 minutes was really,